This is Mark Strassman, a reporter with Grid World. We're about to talk to Jane Patterson, who is the executive director of the Rural Internet Access Authority in North Carolina, and a lot of other things as we're going to find out. Welcome to Grid World.
Thanks very much, Mark. Welcome to over the air, at least to North Carolina.
Yes, thank you.
Sunny day.
Is it a sunny day?
Oh yeah.
Oh good.
Crocuses are coming up.
Oh, all right. Well, maybe I'll maybe you should put up a webcam and let everybody see them at least. What is the Rural Internet Access Authority there in North Carolina?
This is an authority that was established by the North Carolina General Assembly to work to make sure that rural North Carolina conquered the digital divide. And we began in 2001 when we were 47th in the country, and according to the FCC, in the percentage of our folks who could get high-speed access and would buy it. And we moved up to the end of December in 2002. We moved up to 14th, according to the FCC.
So you've got momentum.
Well, and we just got through with our latest studies here, and 80% of our households in North Carolina can now get high-speed access.
Okay.
And keep in mind that half of North Carolina is rural. 85 of our 100 counties are rural.
So does that
the population is split exactly half and half.
So that and what's the penetration in the rural and in the urban areas?
In the urban areas, so in the rural areas, we're going to be slightly over 50% of all. But we're talking about a state that is, you know, it takes. Some people don't realize it take you over about. 8.5-9 hours to drive across it.
So does that mean half the people in rural areas have broadband?
They can buy it if they want it. They can buy it. And they can get broadband access.
How many of them? How many of them have it?
Well, I said that we went from. Well, how many of them are buying it?
Right.
Well, you get the companies to tell you that.
Okay.
That's a hard thing, but we are finishing up a survey next week, which is the third one we've done in three and a half years,
right,
that will give us what the citizens say. We'll now know what the citizens say about whether they're connected or not, and we'll be able to give you that by the middle of next week.
Okay. What was the philosophy behind the legislation that said the state needs to get involved in making sure that the digital divide is as small as possible?
Because the state realized, I believe, if you're going to be competitive in the 21st century, that information technology is basically the currency of that, and you better get your citizens so they can use it. And so that was the goal, and that was the reason it was done. Now, let me state, for all those people listening, that it is a state authority housed by statute in a nonprofit. Okay.
Right.
And that our money came from another nonprofit in the Research Triangle Park, and it was called MCNC, and they gave us $30 million.
What does that stand for?
MCNC. It was originally the Microelectronics Center of North Carolina.
Right.
Was privatized, and is now its own 501c3, and they sold one of their companies to JDS Uniphase for a lot of money. Some technology they spun off into a company and said, let's give something back to the state, and they gave it to us to get the state connected. And we've leveraged another $200 million from our companies, from cable and telephone companies.
And they pretty much just contributed that voluntarily.
Well, they had a lot of push from the authority, but yes, they did, I think. I mean, you have to say they did it voluntarily.
Okay, so with all that in place then, North Carolina seems to have decided to go on to the next stage in computing, which is grid computing, and there was a study done by Robert Cohen, and there was a conference about it, and there was a lot of news coverage of it. It says here, grid computing could have $10 billion impact to North Carolina.
That's right.
Tell us about the origins of that study
time, we have North Carolina has consistently used information technology to help it move ahead. You know, we've done this three times now, from the first network in the digital network statewide in the country in the early 80s, and then we moved to the ATM Sonnet network. And now we're trying to get everybody, the citizens, to get them on the Internet. And so the next logical choice was, how do we get people to be on grids? And so we thought, you know, it's up to MCNC and the universities to try to kick off moving the universities on grids. But no one will do this unless we show what the economic benefit analysis would be.
Okay, and
that's why we did the study.
And what did the study show?
The study showed that there would be a major impact to the state.
Right.
in fact, if we went to grid computing.
And
that, in fact, we would have, you know, as you said, 10.1 billion additional in output, and that we would actually have an additional 24,000 jobs. That's even with losing some jobs that are created from, you know, increased industrial growth, and also some jobs you might lose due to the adoption of grid and web services.
Talk about that a little bit. How does grid computing lead to the loss of jobs? How does grid computing lead to the creation of more jobs?
Well, in the loss of jobs, you're going to lose jobs if you're on grids. You're going to have more efficiency in managing that network, and you don't have to have as many folks doing that.
So essentially, IT people.
But then, you know, I think also that they, in fact, might move to another position, and that is, you'll lose some jobs, but you'll gain ultimately. You have a net gain of 24,000.
Where do you get the jobs? Where do you gain them?
You gain the jobs out in the rural areas of the state and in the urban areas in the increase in the applications of grid is where you're going to gain those. You'll gain them in research people. You'll gain them in applications folks.
So essentially you need fewer people to support the infrastructure, but and you get a more powerful infrastructure, and you can therefore do more with that, produce more, hire more people to do what you need to do with that power. Is that about right?
You free up the capital to spend on new plant equipment, employee training, research and development as well.
Okay, now the study was done under the auspices of your organization, right, the Rural Internet Access Authority, and who was the report given to, and who's responsible for implementing it, or has that been decided
actually,
yet?
The report is actually given to, was announced statewide at the conference that you mentioned earlier.
Right.
And now the first initial part of this will be taken over by MCNC and the universities in beginning to deploy grids. You know, a lot of people are talking about grid computing.
Right.
But I think we're the first state to put our money where our mouth is.
Okay.
And so there is money to fund the rollout for the universities in grid computing.
Okay, and what is that rollout going to involve, and when's it going to take place?
Well, it's already started. They're already beginning to, with the universities, we completely shut down the supercomputer at the MCNC and began to move things to clusters at the universities, at the major research universities here in the Triangle, Duke, Carolina, NC State, and then began to move out and develop new clusters in the regional universities, and there are 16 universities in the system.
Okay.
They're all across the state. They're from the mountains to Manio, as we call it, Murphy to Manio.
Explain to our new listeners what cluster computing is.
Well, they're different kinds. Cluster computing is, you've got these people say, well, what is cluster? The clusters permit the use of cheaper computers to do the work that could previously be completed by large, very expensive supercomputers.
Right.
For example, pharmaceutical companies such as GlaxoSmithKline use clusters. They're basically using a series and parallel computing to literally use the computers that you have, as well as high-speed clusters like Linux clusters that are fairly inexpensive to move into companies to run.
So essentially clusters involve the networking of the processing capacity of servers or PCs or both?
PCs.
So essentially, if there are 1,000 sitting around on everyone's desk, those can be hooked up into a cluster.
That's true.
So a cluster is kind of a grid for within one enterprise.
A cluster actually helps make the grid. The grid is a software system that lets you have uniform and location-independent access to geographically and organizationally dispersed resources with clusters, okay?
So
the grid pulls the clusters together.
So clusters are components of grids.
That's right.
Okay. And with the project that you're actually working on now, who's involved and what are they setting up?
Well, MCNC is leading this for the university system.
Right.
And are setting these up. We are going to begin, and they will be working with the education system of the state to get it into grids. We will be, and you have to do a lot with grids. You're going to create new types of companies, new types of applications, new people working, particularly in the area of security.
Right.
It will be a big new increase in that kind. Of course, that dovetails, doesn't it, well, the homeland security stuff.
Well, you're talking about the security of the grid, or using the grid for security concerns, or both?
You're talking about security on the grid. You're talking about securing your data. If you're a researcher that is working on a grid, you want to make sure that your data is secured from being accessed by others, unless they have password protection into it.
Right.
So there's a lot to be done in learning how to do this.
Okay.
And that is, I think, a very, very important. The other thing is that the companies in the state, the private sector companies,
right,
already, like Bank of America, moving into using web services, which is sort of like the middleware.
Right.
And they are beginning to use web services to use their legacy systems and then access the grid as well to move across to their other customers and banks in the state.
Okay, say a little bit more about web services and how that relates to grid computing.
Well, web services, a computer program is capable of collaborating with each other over multiple networks,
right?
You can deliver a result to a user. In other words, they're real loosely put together. They can be connected with other web services, and they're very coupled together. The idea behind web services was to establish a world of computing where programs could be written using universally accepted standards.
Right.
So web services then could link previously legacy databases,
right,
and information into one system that customers can then utilize, such as that's what backs up online banking. People don't realize that's a very rubber-hits-the-road use of web services.
So how are web services used in banking?
Web services are actually linking the legacy databases,
right,
that banks have and make them capable of being accessed by their citizens.
Okay. So to what extent is the private sector now saying that they want to be involved in the grid
well,
in North Carolina?
They're already involved.
Oh, okay.
In North Carolina. The Bank of America is very much involved. Glaxo and SmithKline are very much involved in grid computing because of the development of pharmaceuticals and the ability to cut as much as sometimes 18 months off the development of a new drug, which is just pure money when you're looking at that. Eli Lilly is in the state doing research with their grid and actually connected to Indiana to their offices over a grid. So you're beginning to see in automotive companies in Detroit are beginning to say to small rural automotive suppliers, you need to be on an enterprise grid with us. And so it really, there's a lot of work to be done. It's sort of like layers of computing.
Right.
It's layers and applications to really help enable these applications. And you won't know everything you need to do, Mark, until you get going and get started.
Now, what, if anything, is the government doing to involve itself as a facilitator or a user of web services and grid computing?
Well, it will begin, I think, to move fairly quickly to look at schools across the state and how you get them on the grid.
Right. You mean universities or K-12?
I'm talking about K-12.
Right.
K-12, and I think you'll see the government looking at its own resources as it connects with counties. Particularly, this could be very helpful to small counties. I don't know about other states, but in other countries, you know, we have a county like Georgia has 169 or something like that.
Right.
And consequently, many of these counties don't have the capability to manage their IT systems.
Right.
So you could bring them with an access onto the grid, and you would give them computing power and resources they have no access to.
So does that mean essentially that the state could develop a kind of universal system of county administration services?
No, it's not county administration as much as it is county the counties being able to access and go where they want to go, okay? You could. I mean, you know, the school, the K-12 has a big, huge new system they want to develop for all the 2,000-and-something schools in the state.
Right.
They can do that much more effectively across the grid.
Well, presumably, then, if you have a program for attendance and for testing and for health care and for other kinds of things that the schools want to do, you can essentially build it once and use it many times under this system, couldn't you?
Well, it's possible, but keep in mind, it isn't so much the system, it is the people you and the organizations you have to connect to this. You have to get them willing to work in this process as well. So it's always, it's never the technology, it's always the folks that surround that who have to, and
okay,
the turf that you have to deal with.
Well, talk more about that, because it seems to me that there's a possibility here for a lot of creation of universal systems, but as you just said, the difficulty is not in creating the universal systems, but in creating the use patterns among the users.
I think what you have to do is you've got to get the early adapters into this.
Right.
And in this situation, the early adapters are going to be the university system.
Right.
In the state, both public and private. And there are 16 public universities and 37 private. And connected with MCNC as sort of the manager of all this.
Right.
And so, you know, people will be watching very carefully their success in doing this.
Are
how they develop the human organizational systems,
right,
to support this.
Will the universities be doing things like offering degrees in grid computing or sub-degrees for computer scientists in grid computing to train more people?
It's very interesting because this past week we spent, and I can't say whom, but recruiting one of the gurus in grid in the world to get them here.
Right.
And then recently Daniel Reed, I'm sure his name is familiar to most people out of Illinois, has come to the university at Chapel Hill to start this huge new Institute of Renaissance Computing. And
I'm sorry, what kind of computing?
Renaissance computing.
I've never heard that term before.
Well, it's a very interesting...
what is it?
I can't define it for you because I don't know what it is. That's what they call it. I presume they mean that it's everything and everybody, right?
Right.
And so you've got... you know, you've got Duke and Chapel Hill and State very much involved in the Lambda Rail initiative as well, which is a nationwide initiative for research universities in a new research network, okay?
Does that have anything to do with Internet 2 that used to be something?
No, it's higher than Internet 2.
Oh, is there still an Internet 2?
No, this is bigger than Internet 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and what does it encompass?
The Lambda Rail Initiative is really the research universities. Every time you start and people begin to be beyond the early adapters and they become the users, then the faculty and the researchers always want to be a little higher. There's too much interference in the network when the regular folks get on it, right?
Right.
And so that's what happened to Internet 2. You had Internet 2. And now as you have Internet 2 beginning to be more populated, you're getting the universities, the more higher research universities saying, we want to create this new research network. And that's Lambda Rail.
It's kind of like the frontier mentality.
Yeah.
They want it light out for the territory where there are fewer people.
But that's Lambda Rail, and that's what that
okay.
is.
Okay, how do you spell that?
L-A-M-D-A, Lambda Rail,
okay.
R-A-I-L.
All right.
And so the universities in the park and the Research Triangle here, the Research Triangle is such an incredible place to do this kind of testing out of new levels of computing because you have not only, you know, Nortel and Ericsson and Cisco and IBM, you have GlaxoSmithKline, Lilly, you have all these big companies that need this kind of access to computing. And they work together along with the universities in a test beds that are here. And so then they're able to spread these, thank goodness, across the state.
Okay. Let me ask you something that I hope is relevant to what we've been talking about. North Carolina used to be a leading textile state, and a lot of that went offshore, and it stopped doing that. And it committed itself to becoming a high-tech state, sort of as a way of dealing with that.
Mm-hmm.
And now it has. And I did a story a few days ago about states that are legislating against outsourcing, and North Carolina is one of the leaders there, and the worry apparently is...
I don't think we've legislated on outsourcing yet.
Pending legislation about it. Actually, no one's passed anything yet.
Yeah.
And the idea was that North Carolina wasn't going to get its newest industry pulled out from under it, and I'm wondering what the role or relationship between outsourcing in North Carolina or generally is with grid computing and whether they're complementary or contradictory or whether there's any relation at all, do you think?
No. In the textile industry, we think that grid computing will have a prediction, at least that Cohen has, is based on the fact that you incorporate the price changes. The model that we looked at incorporated price changes in international markets.
Right.
And due to the lowering of prices and due to lower costs that can result from the adoption of all this electronic transactions via computing, the prices for our textiles becomes more competitive in the international market. Thus, we have the textile manufacturers could expand their market share. And I think that's happened. We've seen that happen to us with hosiery in North Carolina. Hosiery, you know, was a dying just like everything else was, and they really came very focused on technology, and now they run practically without, you know, a lot of people.
Right.
But they still have the hosiery industry is still, we're number one in hosiery. So,
well,
I mean, it's a very, you know, I think no one knows how this big new world market is going to react.
Right.
And you're always throwing the dice. And I think what we've done here in looking at the grid computing in textiles and in furniture, as Bob Cohen has, is what we've done with this is really given an opportunity for us to make it. The dice may roll the wrong way, but if you're not out rolling dice, you don't have a chance to win anything.
So is the idea, as it's understood there now, that grid computing, you said, it's going to create a surplus of jobs, an excess of jobs from what was before. Is there any worry that by creating computers so powerful as to do so much that they will eventually end up, in the long run, reducing employment?
I don't know that that there's a worry about that right now.
Okay.
I mean, it seems that everyone is, really thinks it's important that we can gain great efficiencies over the next 5 to 8 years with grid computing, and it allows us to reduce your cost structure, improve your productivity, reduce your product prices, and become more competitive. And that's what the name of the game is going to be in working in international markets.
Okay. As Executive Director of the Rural Internet Access Authority, what exactly do you do on a day-to-day basis about grid computing?
On a day-to-day basis, we try to make sure that our citizens in rural North Carolina and that the infrastructure out there is capable of doing this, okay?
Right.
As I said, when we started, we were 47th in the country of the ability of our citizens to learn to use the computer, get on the Internet, and have the infrastructure out there when we started. Today, we just finished, and 80% of all households in North Carolina can get broadband now if they want to buy it. That's a hell of a jump.
Is that having an impact in test scores, in health, in other things, in employment?
It absolutely will have an impact. I mean, I don't know any place in the country where someone has actually gone in and looked at what's the impact on this on, you know, your scores going up.
Right.
But we know, for example, in our surveys that our citizens tell us they use the Internet for education at a higher level than the rest of the citizens in the country do, from other surveys. And that this is, you know, the education is a very important thing to them in getting on the Internet. And we know that our small businesses are coming on at very high percentages onto the Internet now, using it and working worldwide. So computing is opening up rural areas, and grid computing, we think, will do nothing but enhance that.
So, in fact, what you're saying is that North Carolina as a state is an early adopter.
That's right.
And you see North Carolina as a role model, and if so, do you see that as providing economic benefits to North Carolina?
Yes, because it means that folks who want to work with grids, companies that want to work with grids, folks who are developing the applications and the middleware, this is where they'll come to test this and to be involved in it. We did this when we worked with our, with our effort a few years ago on health communication technologies, and we saw a number of companies come into the state to really be involved in that process.
So essentially the economic model is that companies will locate in North Carolina in order to be in the thick of the grid
activity. And not only locate here, but it's going to, I think, really jumpstart a lot more entrepreneurship by our own graduate students and engineering and computing professionals, and also other professionals in the medical arena. North Carolina has a huge life sciences involvement. We're one of the big clusters in the whole country. And you'll see these folks starting companies is what you'll see, because they have the capability to test this on the grid fairly quickly.
So like it'll become Grid Valley or something.
Yeah, Grid Valley. Well, that's right. Grid has a two meanings. One expands, the other stops, right?
Right. Or the license plate.
In the East Coast, it expands.
Right. Or the license plate would say the grid state or something. Right?
Okay.
Do you get calls from other states saying, tell us what you're doing and so on?
We have lots of calls from other states. I mean, this has been a very, if we were selling this document, it would have been a bestseller.
Okay.
We've had huge interest in it across the country and in other parts of the world.
All right. Again, what I wrote an article a few weeks ago calling for GovGrids. What is happening in North Carolina with the government, again, the state and the counties, to take advantage of it or to facilitate it?
Well, what you see around the country in big states is that a lot of small governments need to get on, period, in the beginning. And we've also run a project here out of our office on getting local governments online,
right,
being able to use broadband and be able to use transactional applications.
Right.
And so you're also seeing Governor Mark Warner from Virginia has been pushing the southern governors to create a southern grid.
Right.
Okay? As a southern computing grid across the south. And this has been a big interest of Governor Warner's. You might want to check with.
I think I will. When we're off the air, don't tell us here, but you can tell me off the air who to talk to, and I'll try to talk to him or someone in his office next. So far, have there been efforts to recruit hundreds of thousands of individual PC users to get them involved in providing cycles for grids. Is North Carolina doing that at all?
There are places applications going on in the state. In fact, there's also the company United Devices, which is very much involved in this. The CEO, I think, of that is a graduate of Chapel Hill, and has been in the state a number of times working with companies and so forth trying to do that.
Because it seemed to me, and actually something else I wrote about in something called CaliGrid for California,
is that
almost all the states are bankrupt, essentially, in terms of their finances. And taxpayers don't want to pay more taxes. But millions of taxpayers have computers where the cycles are 80%, 85% not being used.
Right.
And it seemed to me if they could be hooked up in state grids, and the state and then back to the counties could take advantage of that computing capacity, they could save a lot of money, it wouldn't cost the taxpayers anything, and they'd deliver some value to the state. Is that something that's...
Well, I mean, that's an interesting idea, Mark, but remember, and I certainly would support that, but remember what I said earlier, that security is a big issue here.
Right.
And so, you know, one would have to make certain that... security is a question you look at when you're pulling individual households in with their
right.
computers. And
well,
the,
which way is the security worry? That the individual households will steal the state secrets, or the state will sneak information about the users?
Well, both ways. I think you'll get both ways. You really have to get a group of adapters who are willing to be part of a research group, and that's
right.
And I think we'll be able to do that.
So, in fact, that's what the universities where people are used to doing these kind of things have been in the forefront, but the need is to kind of spread that ethic
right.
out
right.
to a wider audience. Okay.
Right.
Can voice over IP be supported by grids? Can speech recognition be supported over grids? Would creating more grids make those more cost-effective or cheaper?
I'm not as up on that, and I wouldn't want to make a prediction on that. I think you'd have to ask... one of our grid gurus, as we call it, that
okay.
issue. Okay,
I can do that. And something else, I don't know if this is too technical either, but the difference between intense computation and transactional computing, and whether grid computing is more suited for one or the other.
I wouldn't answer that either, but I would
okay.
think that it would be, you know, you'd be much more interested in intensive computing than just transactional.
Right, okay. And finally, could radio or TV stations be used once you've worked out the security concerns to recruit hundreds of thousands of people to get
oh, yeah.
signed up, or to run them themselves? Or?
No, we could help them. They could help recruit these for us.
Right.
In fact, they have been very much a part of our effort to get North Carolina citizens to get online and to buy broadband. I mean, they've given us over $2 million worth of free PSA.
Right.
That's pretty phenomenal.
What are the big two or three big issues that you're working on now going forward?
Well, our biggest issue that we're working on right now is continue to try to drive that number up from 80% to 90%
right.
of our citizens. And that means we're doing a lot of work on wireless. We've had a 3G deployment that we've been working with.
Right.
We're working with non-line-of-sight wireless equipment, which is working in the mountains and on our coast. And we're finding that we've got huge learning curves in the wireless area, but it really does hold the possibility to just blow wide open the rural areas.
Well, this sounds... I'm almost getting ready. I'm going to check the plane schedules to fly out to North Carolina now.
Well, let me tell you how wonderful it is.
Go ahead.
What it does is open up an area that, in particular, an area of Allegheny Mountains in North Carolina.
Right.
And the whole opening up this area for broadband has really given them such a sense of how they can accomplish anything that they have actually gone out to create a teapot museum.
I'm sorry, what kind of museum?
A teapot.
Oh.
A teapot museum, which is a couple from California, actually. Their collection is going to be housed here in North Carolina for everyone to come off the Smoky Mountain Blue Ridge Parkway
right.
and to come right into Sparta. And be a part of enjoying that teapot collection.
Well, in addition to allowing people who've been in more isolated areas to become less isolated, have you seen much in the way of distance telecommuters? Fortune wrote about this 10 years ago, people moving to Wyoming to be stockbrokers, where people now with broadband access in the most distant places can come from urban centers or other places and move to the rural area and do
absolutely.
All the... Is
absolutely.
That happening very
yes,
much?
But also it holds the opportunity out for folks who live in rural areas to make a living and survive there.
Right.
Because we have one woman I know that's a good example who does a lot of the downloading of over their MP3 into her computer's voice recognition of the Washington... the senator's hearings and so forth.
Right.
And she's also doing it for a number of other states. And so she has that downloaded to her computer and the voice recognition. She goes through and checks everything out, and she ships it back in about 5 or 6 hours. And she's being able to live with her elderly parents and help support them and live here in a very rural area of North Carolina. She couldn't do that without the ability to access.
Well, I think that's the promise of technology that's been promised for a long time, and
yeah.
it sounds like it's actually being developed. So... very interested to know more
to
about it later.
We'd love to have you come look at all that's going on here.
Okay, well, maybe we get the station to send me out there and.
Come in the spring when it's we have 9 months out of 12. We have great weather in terms of warm, and you can actually surf in the ocean 9 out of 12.
So. Well, we don't want to tell everybody about how great it is there because you know then we'll be like the people at the universities who get upset that the internet too is crowded with too many tourists.
And
everybody will want to come to North Carolina. So let me thank you very much. Don't hang up. I want to get some off the air information.
Okay.
But thanks very much for talking to us. Good luck with all this, and hopefully we're going to see more of it in North Carolina and everywhere else. Thanks again.
Uh-huh.